KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimmigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. EATS is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. King Cove and Sandpoint, you have home games once again tonight. The Lady Eagles will face the Rookies here in Sandpoint, and the T-Jacks will play the Eagles there in King Cove. You can tune in live here on KSDP, or you can enjoy, free of charge, in person, courtesy of KSDP. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashev, today variable winds 10 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 5 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, today west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashev, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, partly sunny. Isolated snow showers in the morning. Highs in the lower 30s to lower 40s. Northeast winds 15 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear. Highs in the lower 20s to lower 30s. Northwest winds 15 miles an hour. And Friday, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming partly cloudy. Highs in the upper 20s to mid-30s. North winds 15 miles an hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 3:19 a.m. at 6 feet 11 inches. A low at 8:51 at 2 feet 4 inches. A high at 2:41 p.m. at 7 feet 8 inches. And a low tonight at 9:18, a minus tide of 3 inches. Your sun rose at 9:08 this morning, and your sun will set at 6:44, giving us 9 hours and 36 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, a conversation with Alaska House Speaker Bryce Edgman, and a new initiative from the Museum of the Aleutians is bringing Unungam Tenu to display labels. Stay tuned.
Local programming on KUCB is made possible by the Aleutian Housing Authority, providing affordable housing services in the Aleutian Pribilof Islands region and working hard to create employment, job training opportunities, and promote economic development. More information at ahaak.org.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, February 13th, 2025. This is your reminder that tomorrow is Valentine's Day, so it's not too late to pick up flowers and chocolates for that special someone. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. Bryce Edgman has represented Unalaska in the state legislature for almost 20 years. Last month, he picked up the speaker's gavel again for the first time since 2021. A lot of important initiatives are on his mind going into the new session, and he told me about some of them. Here's part of our conversation.
So this is the third time I've been Speaker of the House. I'm not necessarily new to the job. I'm a veteran legislator who has served in just about every leadership position in the House over my almost two decades of service. I'm very familiar with how things work, the budget process, having served on the Finance Committee for a decade and probably a little bit longer when I include subcommittees and the like. But I use my position to the best of my ability in terms of being able to protect programs that are in the operating budget, services that are very critical to people in Unalaska and throughout the entirety of my district. And in the capital budget, when there's any opportunities, to put items into the budget, we did get a couple items last year into the budget. I'm all over it. I'm very cognizant of the community's needs, and certainly we'll be meeting with the city delegation when they come into Juneau, and the city manager and the mayor and others.
Now, we've spoken a couple of times about the seafood task force, but I don't think I've actually told our audience yet what that is and the type of work that you do. So what's the rundown you'd give to someone who's just never heard of it before?
Yeah, I think the short version is that it's a task force that the legislature created to really stand back and somewhat in isolation through the, the eyes of eight members of the legislature, take a hard look at the industry as a whole and to recognize that the seafood industry in Alaska is facing perhaps its most challenging times with the global market dynamics and what's happening in Russia and China and certainly aging infrastructure all throughout the coast of Alaska. And, to really take a hard look at what the state could do to provide a helping hand. And also, too, very importantly, to elevate the importance of the seafood industry and to set the stage for work to be done, beyond this session and next year. Our first meeting was in August, and our last meeting was, I'm going to say, about 2 weeks ago now, here in Juneau. Just to wrap things up, there is a report that you can get your hands on and maybe help guide your sense of what the recommendations were that we came up with.
Just out of the pre-filed bills, has anything surprised you about what your colleagues are interested in?
A lot of the bills that have been introduced have been bills that have been introduced before, didn't quite make it through the process, and now are coming back again. The pension reform bill that is going to begin the conversation on a reinstatement of a defined benefits plan in Alaska, and there's going to be a lot of interest in that, and it's going to be a real priority of the caucus that I serve in. So I would say that people should keep an eye out for that. Elections reform is another area that we talked a little bit about when I was down in the studio there with you in person in September last year. That's another topic that I think is going to get a lot of focus from the legislature. The bill at the moment, of course, and the focus of the legislature at this point is permanently increasing the base student allocation, a critical part of K-12 education funding. I'll be talking with the superintendent and the school board members about that here in the short term. So, yeah, in terms of being surprised, I'm racking my brain trying to think if there's been a bill that's really just sort of surprised me. The reacting to the Trump executive orders, we had to pass a resolution, which passed the Senate today, but it went through the House initially to encourage our delegation to do whatever it took to make sure that Denali remains Denali and doesn't get renamed to the Department of Interior.
Speaking of stuff happening at the national level, pretty much anyone you ask who has even a little bit of federal funding in their budget is on edge right now. What is the Alaska State Legislature planning to do to support these folks? Or are you guys receiving any information that you can share with the public who are maybe worried about their job security or the security of their organizations?
Yeah, it's a big topic. We've had many organizations already come to the office talking about their funding sources, their federal funding sources being paused, and you know, their sense of optimism that you know, they'll be okay in the end. So right now, I would say we are in an alert status, a wait and see status, and we will have the delegation, Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, Representative Begich, all coming through Juneau here very shortly within the next month, giving their joint addresses to the legislature and making themselves available to talk to legislators on all subjects. So I'm very eager, more so, I guess, than any time that I can remember, to have those conversations, get their interpretations, and also to get their sense of whether or not there's going to be another huge fight over a possible government shutdown.
And we're talking a shutdown at the federal level?
Yeah, at the federal level.
And is there anything that you want our listeners to know as soon as even like next Tuesday or Wednesday?
We're about 3 weeks now in the session, and it's been a very interesting start to session with a lot of focus on education. Oil prices are down a little bit. That's kind of constrained, you know, what we can do in operating the capital budgets. But we, you know, had talked about what's happening back east. I think there's apprehension, there's trepidation. I can feel it here in the Capitol in terms of what to expect next from the new president and his administration. And maybe more than anything, there's uncertainty. There's also optimism that resource development opportunities in the state might have a better go at it, if you will, under the Trump administration versus the Biden administration. I'm not quite sure what all that means, if it really is noteworthy as maybe, you know, it's projected to be. So yeah, we're working hard down here, and I think in the end we'll do good work for the district. And if there's any thing that I can do or my staff can do or whatever, please reach out, let us know. That's what we're down here for. And I make constituent requests. You know, they go right to the top of my list when they come into the office, whether we get them phone calls or emails or whatever it might be. So, yeah, really happy to serve the district, and very much an honor to, you know, to represent Unalaska and the surrounding area.
That was part of a conversation I had earlier this month with House Speaker Bryce Edgeman about his work in the new legislative session. The interview will be up on our website soon. That's KUCB.org. The Museum of the Aleutians is adding both Unungam Tinu and Tagalog to its display labels, reflecting the region's Ununga heritage and Filipino community. Collections manager Josel Hale leads a new project called Indigenizing the Museum of the Aleutians, Redefining Exhibition Labels. They invite community members to an introductory event on label making tonight at the Unalaska Public Library. Learn the art of label writing by bringing objects from home and crafting labels that tell your own family's story. KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi sat down with Hale to learn more about the exhibition labels project and tonight's workshop. Here's part of their conversation.
All right, let's first talk about MOTA's project, Indigenizing the Museum of the Aleutians, Redefine Exhibition Labels. Could you walk us through what visitors currently see when they read labels in the museum, and then discuss why the museum is redefining them?
Yeah, so right now our labels have, if applicable, Unungam Tinu for certain animals and some Unungam Tinu in other areas of the museum, but it's mostly English or Russian for Unungak artifacts and small little descriptions. We really only have a few descriptive labels and mostly tombstone labels, which is very basic information. So what the object is, how old it is, where it came from, kind of like when you have an actual tombstone, somebody's name, where, when they died, when they lived, you know, that kind of thing. So to what we're, our hope is with this redefining exhibition, is that we will lead every label with the Unungam Tinu. That is the ancestral and native language of the land that we're on, and so that should be first and foremost. We are going to keep some of the Russian words that are there because they are still used by community members. But the main aspect of this project is to update the labels that you see. Some of the information is a little outdated, and that happens a lot within museums. This museum was built in 1999, so a lot of information gets discovered between 1999 and 2025, and so it's important to keep up with those updates, and we don't want to be giving out any outdated information with our labels.
What role have local community members played in developing the new labels?
Yeah, currently we're in this section where we're really focusing on the language aspect in incorporating Enungam Tenu. Later on, we'll likely be hosting another label making workshop to invite the community members to come and look at the labels and the artifacts that they're associated with and have them help us get additional information. There might be something that somebody's grandparents donated or that was from somebody's family, and we don't have that information, and there's a lot that can be added with community knowledge. So by working with Enungam Tenu speakers and other community members such as Russell to add Tagalog to try and help engage also with the Filipino community more in our community, trying to get as many people involved as we can to try and really make this a community space for everyone.
All right, now let's talk about Thursday evening's event at the library from 5:30 to 8. You're going to do a short presentation, and then after that there will be a hands-on label writing and making workshop. Participants are welcome to bring an object from home to write about. What kind of objects are you referring to?
It could be anything. I feel like a lot of people, when they think about museums, they think about these really awesome pieces like the Chigdachs that we have or the Woman of Unalashka. But a lot of the other things that we have are harpoon points. Those are things, little things that people would have used every day. So if you want to bring in your favorite mug, if you want to bring in just your watch, those are things that in the future historians and archaeologists are going to find really interesting. It can be a stuffed animal. It can be really anything that you want to look at, because human culture, we assign value to things. And even if, you know, your Apple Watch isn't something that's been passed down, it might be something that you really care for. It might be something that is, and it's something that's really big in the zeitgeist of America right now. And so that's something that you could write about the cultural significance of that. And it doesn't have to be just significant to you. It could be a cultural significance in general. So really anything people want would be great. I'd love to see the variety.
That was KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi speaking with Museum of the Aleutians collection manager Joselle Hale about adding Enungam Tenu and Tagalog to museum labels. Tonight's workshop on label making begins at 5:30 at the Unalaska Public Library. For more information on the event, visit KUCB.org's community calendar. And for the full island interview, head to our website later this week, or tune into KUCB 89.7 FM tomorrow at noon after the Bering Sea Barometer, or Saturday afternoon at 4. As you just heard, a new episode of the Bering Sea Barometer airs tomorrow at noon and 5. Join your host, Captain Pete Nathan, for a taste of the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea. Be sure to check out our other new series, too. It's called Amplifying the Aleutians. We interview longtime Channel 8 TV and KUCB alums for a glimpse into the history of the station and, by extension, Unalaska itself. Find all episodes of both shows on our website and on Spotify. Let's take a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. The Unalaska Raiders basketball teams are heading to Nanilchik for a series of games this week, facing off against Nanilchik, Nikiski, and Toke. KUCB will broadcast the games live, so head to your community calendar for the full schedule. That's at kucb.org. For Valentine's Day tomorrow, the Chart Room at the Grand Aleutian Hotel will offer a special 5-course dinner featuring build-your-own surf and turf. reservations are strongly encouraged. The Great Backyard Bird Count takes place at the Museum of the Aleutians Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2. This citizen scientist program is free and open to everyone. Binoculars and guides will be available. The Unalaska Book Club meets in, you guessed it, the public library Sunday afternoon at 4. All are welcome. This month's selection is Sleepwalk by Dan Shawn. And finally, the PCR Father-Daughter Dance is in the Community Center Sunday evening at 5. To learn more about these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at KUCB.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at KUCB.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Enjoy the weekend and happy Valentine's Day.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Southeast Alaska sport anglers should be able to harvest king salmon all season this year under new regulations adopted by the Alaska Board of Fisheries at its annual meeting in Ketchikan. But non-resident anglers and commercial trawlers may have to give up some fish to make that happen. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
2024 was a perfect storm for king salmon or Chinook fishing in southeast Alaska. The sport fishery, driven primarily by guided non-residents, exceeded its allocation of kings for the second year in a row, and the overage was deducted from the commercial troll allocation. Hence, there was no second commercial troll opening for kings last August. Meanwhile, resident sport anglers were caught in the middle. They couldn't retain kings in August either. This was frustrating for many since resident sport fishing for kings in Southeast is more or less a subsistence fishery important to filling freezers for the winter. Enter Proposal 109, penned by Sitka troller Jackie Foss, which would give Fish and Game the authority to manage these competing interests on the fly during the season by dialing up or ratcheting down bag limits for non-residents while trying to preserve a stable season-long bag limit for residents and maintaining the three-decade-old 80-20 allocation split between commercial and sport harvesters. Longtime Sitka troller Jeff Farver supported the proposal, saying his industry had no way to recover the losses from the last 2 years.
The 23 and 24 sport overages driven by non-resident angler harvest pushed the sport fishery to exceed its allocation by over 30,000 fish. This overage was deducted from the troll fishery at a cost of $2.2 million in next vessel value, which is about $4.4 million in first wholesale value.
Linda Benkin, another Sitka troller and the director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, also believed 109 would stabilize the Southeast King fisheries.
In recent years, one sector, the guided non-resident sport sector, has exceeded its allocation and preempted other sectors. That is the problem we ask you to solve.
Benkin asked the board to preserve the historic 80-20 split and to give the Department of Fish and Game the tools to accomplish that. no sector should be rewarded for allocation overages, she said. The board also heard compelling testimony from the charter sector, particularly arguments about the downstream economic benefits to communities and the region from out-of-state sport fishermen who book expensive trips to lodges. Board member Greg Svedson, an ardent sportsman, focused on this math, even though he didn't quite have the vocabulary.
The sports fishery brings in 6 times to the economy that the trawl fishery brings in. Troll. I'm sorry. I got it. Troll. They're close together. I know the difference, as all you do, too.
The board's middle-of-the-road solution was to not lean too far into the positions of the sport or commercial industries, and instead to find a way to keep sport fishing open for residents for the entire season. Board Chair Marit Carlson Van Dort offered an amendment adjusting the 80-20 split to 75-25 to ensure that there would be enough kings on the sport side for residents.
So the intention with the language as it stands right now was to provide the department that flexibility to manage to primarily, first and foremost, a resident priority.
Board member Mike Wood, a commercial set netter from Talkeetna, proposed amending the split yet again to 77-23. Wood's amendment passed over the objections of board vice chair Tom Carpenter, a commercial fisherman from Cordova.
What it comes down to me is this. There will be a substantial management change based on the language associated with these two numbers. I do not feel that this 3% buffer is going to guarantee the residents a king salmon priority.
Dropping another 3% from their allocation of king salmon was an unwelcome development for the Southeast commercial troll fleet. The guided sport industry would not be particularly happy with a 3% increase that was created for the benefit of residents. To board member Chris Chamberlain, the deal sounded like a win.
I've been through about 500 to 1,000 mediations over the course of my career, and every mediator will tell you that he's done a good job if both sides walk away equally unhappy. And to Mr. Wood and Ms. Carlson Van Dort, based on the discussions I've had with everyone in the crowd following this, great job.
Chamberlain voted in favor. Carpenter and Jared Godfrey opposed. Proposal 109 passed the Board of Fish 5-2. The new regulations will take effect this year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Hatchery production of chum and pink salmon will continue as usual this year in Southeast. After many tense hours of testimony and deliberation at its annual meeting in Ketchikan, the Alaska Board of Fisheries rejected yet another attempt to curb the size of hatchery releases of chum and pink salmon into the wild. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
The hatchery debate touches on the biggest unknown in salmon ecology. What occurs in the ocean between a salmon's birth and when it returns to spawn? Proposal 156 was submitted to the Board of Fish by Virgil Umpenauer, a member of the Fairbanks Region Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and some form of this same idea has come before the board at least 4 previous times. Umpenauer believes that the millions upon millions of chum and pink released into the wild by hatcheries in Southeast Alaska every year are affecting the marine environment to the detriment of wild stocks of other species, like Chinook in western Alaska. He proposed that the Board of Fish cut back hatchery releases in Southeast by 25%. Stakeholders in Southeast packed the board's meeting last week to oppose the plan.
Just line up, folks, because we got a long room.
That's member Mike Wood chairing a committee of the whole when the board steps away for a bit to take a deeper dive into related proposals. Proposal 156 generated only 10 favorable comments from the public and 400 opposed. Sitka troller Jackie Foss was one of them.
Like any operation, you need diversification in order to be profitable, and this would take a major pillar from our ability to be profitable.
The short story is that while king salmon make the headlines, hatchery-produced chum salmon have become an economic mainstay in the Southeast troll fishery. They've increased significantly in value over the last decade or more, and some of the returns have been just staggering. Millions of chum returning to a release site in West Crawfish Inlet in 2018 was a bonanza for trollers from around the region. Many stakeholders objected that someone from Fairbanks would try to roll back this kind of economic opportunity.
Heather Bauscher, Petersburg AC. We were in unanimous opposition to this. Initial concerns were that the proposer is not from this region and doesn't understand the impacts that this would have for communities.
Keenan Sanderson with the Tlingit and Haida Community Council has a degree in salmon ecology. He thought the proposal's 25% cut in hatchery production was ill-conceived.
You're not going just to see a reduction in salmon, but you're going to see a reduction in marine mammals. You're going to see a reduction in salmon sharks and pretty much everything that uses salmon as a food resource.
Others testified that more than the ecosystem would be affected. Steve Reifenstuhl is the former general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, one of two large hatcheries in the area. He felt that the economics of fishing would change.
Overall, any cut would affect coho and Chinook production. They don't pay the bills. They're very expensive. They don't really return one-to-one. It's less than one-to-one in terms of benefit cost. So that has to come from somewhere. So a cut in pink and chum would result in lowering budgets for coho and Chinook.
Reifenstuhl reminded the board that over 100 pages of scientific literature had been submitted showing that there was no linkage between Southeast hatchery production and salmon returns to the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. But board member Curtis Chamberlain disagreed. He believed there was a growing correlation between the size of hatchery releases in Southeast and the weight and ages of wild stocks harvested elsewhere around the state.
None of the scientific articles cited in opposition to Proposal 156 disputed this correlation, but instead cited other causes of mortality that are not within the board's control or correlations that touch on the broader carrying capacity issue.
Chamberlain offered a compromise. He proposed cutting pink production by only 7% and chums by 20%. When the Board of Fish met in full the following day to vote on the proposal, most members found the idea of any reduction in hatchery production to be arbitrary. Member Tom Carpenter from Cordova remained unconvinced.
I think that it's imperative that the board, when they make decisions like this,
only member Stan Zaray from Tanana joined Chamberlain in supporting the reduction. Zaray has a 25-year history watching the emergence of hatchery programs and observing changes in the ecosystems and economies on the rivers.
I am very frustrated as I read the preponderance of peer-reviewed studies showing possible harm from the present Alaska hatchery biomass in the ocean. So many Alaska fishermen's lives and families now depend on hatcheries. I do not believe this is what the original intent of hatcheries was.
Zaray said that Alaska's hatcheries should never have been allowed to grow to the point where they were needed to sustain Alaska's fisheries. Proposal 156 failed 2-5, with members Zaray and Chamberlain in favor. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Oh, to dance.
I need to sit and groove.
Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting is generously supported by the City of Sandpoint. Sandpoint is a first-class city in the Aleutians East Borough, located on Humboldt Harbor on the northwestern Popoff Island. Anchorage is 575 nautical miles to the northeast. The Sandpoint City Council meets the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. Contact the City of Sandpoint by calling 907-383-2696, emailing sptcity@arctic.net or visiting their website at sandpointak.com.
sun refused to shine. Never thought I'd have to pay so dearly for what was already mine. For such a long, long time. Accidentally, like a martyr, the hurt gets worse and the heart gets harder. We made mad love, shallow love, random love, and abandoned love. Accidentally, like a martyr, the hurt gets worse and the heart gets harder.
AM KASDP.